Chiefs are on the right. We're going Hail Mary. There goes Tolliver. A long, high pass. Down in the corner. Batted. They fight. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown!
Oh, my gosh!
That couldn't have happened. Ungodly. My God, somebody caught the ball. Who caught it?
Haynes.
It's Michael Haynes. I can't believe that happened.
Let's go back down to the brand new Las Vegas ballpark for more Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, we got another fabulous facility that's opening up officially tonight. It's the ballpark, new minor league AAA park on the west side of town. Of course, we've got our stadium being built down by Mandalay Bay. The Raiders are going to be here. Fingers crossed, it's all finished. Next year, well, they've got a cool event going down we're going to tell you about on May 8th. And Mike Haynes, you heard him in the highlight there. One of the Raider legends, Hall of Famer, is up with Stephen Adam here on this Tuesday. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Thank you for that great intro.
That was pretty cool, right? Chris here, our producer, put that together.
That was nice.
Jogs the memory. All right. Well, let's. I want to get you on a couple of football topics, and we certainly want to talk Raiders and Antonio Brown in a couple of minutes. But have you seen some of the back and forth and the heat with Aaron Rodgers and some former players? Aaron Rodgers supposedly had been going at Mike McCarthy, and then some former players said that Aaron Rodgers is not a great leader. What do you make of this stuff going on? It seems to be happening more and more with former teammates.
Well, you know, that's a good question. I guess I almost don't have anything in my data bank, you know, and in my experience to reflect on that. You know, I've never seen anything like that. You know, it's always been, maybe I've just been fortunate to have avoided that. But it seems like I never really played on a team like that where guys talked about teammates like that.
Did you hear about it all, or do you think this might be generational where just guys now feel more entitled to just, you know, go after coaches or have those kind of, you know, feelings or disputes?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was generational. That does sound like it's, you know, probably what it is. You know, the way kids are growing up today are not completely different, but vastly different from what I grew up. And it could be, you know, that, you know, teammate was a teammate, and I had your back and you had my back. But, you know, maybe things have changed. You know, money does make people change, as you guys know. And maybe it's related to that. I don't know.
Do you think a team like the, you know, teams that you played on would have been able to function with that kind of discord?
Well, we would have addressed right. The problem. You know what I mean? We would have sat the guy down and talked to him, and we would have addressed it. That's all I can say. And I don't really have a lot of things to draw upon. But that is kind of the way we dealt with things. You know, we put them out there on the table and talked about them and put them behind us if we could.
Mike Haynes is with us, former Raider, former Patriot, Hall of Famer. Last thing on this, because it really centers around the quarterback relationship with receivers, but also the quarterback relationship with the coach. Was there, I mean, you just said you never saw it. So there was never an instance where some of the quarterbacks, say, on the Raiders went at it with Tom Flores, went at it with, maybe not publicly, but just, you know, behind the scenes, went at it with Flores, went at it with Mike Shanahan.
No, I just have never seen it, guys. I'll just be totally honest, I haven't. You know, most of the players would respect the coach, even when they didn't get along with him. They realize he's the coach. It's more like the military, you know, that kind of an atmosphere. And so you may not agree, but he's the coach. And, you know, he's the one that calls the shots. And we don't complain. You know, you might complain with your family at home or something, but you definitely didn't do any complaining at the, you know, in the locker room where other guys could hear about it. Just didn't happen.
All right, well, I'm curious to hear your impression of Antonio Brown, who certainly brings some drama with him, at least baggage. I don't know if he's going to be dramatic in Oakland, but he had his issues with Big Ben. So what do you think about the acquisition of AB?
Well, I'd like to think it's a great acquisition because he's such a great player. But, you know, I don't know how he's going to deal with the challenges that he has right now, because everybody, when he gets here, everyone's going to be talking about this. And I don't know if he'll have an attitude like, hey, I just don't want to talk about it. I want to try and put that behind me and go to work. or if he'll just start talking about it. I have no idea. You know, he has proven that put the ball in his hands and he gets the job done. And if he can just focus on his job and everybody else can focus on their job, maybe we can avoid all that. And that might be why the Patriots have been so great, because Bill Belichick has built a culture there where the guys just do their job and they just talk about that. You know, they don't really talk about other things because those things are out of their hands and they can't control it. You know, you deal with the things you can control, not the things that you can't. And maybe that's how, you know, the great teams have been able to deal with it in the past.
Mike, why are great receivers such drama?
Well, that's how I used to say that's the difference between a wide receiver and a defensive back. You know, the defensive backs usually don't do that. You know, the wide receivers do. And so, like, you know, you have a super talented kid, you know, that's grown up playing football. You know, you'd say, you know what? I think you're a wide receiver. You're not a defensive guy.
Did that change along the way? Was that always the case, or did that change along the way at some point?
You know, that may have changed too. I have no idea. You know, you guys are, because you do it for a living, you're probably closer to it than me and have better observation, you know, with regard and opinion with regard to this than I have.
Well,
I've kind of been away from it.
I'll just say my thought on it has always been that it was probably always the case. We just didn't know about it. So that, I think that's why, you know, we like talking to guys that have been around to say that, you know, maybe that is the case, because with social media and everything now, we know what everybody's thinking all the time. Back then, maybe it was just the case. It was just, you know, kept quiet and private, and we never found out about it in the media.
That could be. You know, that makes a lot of sense to me.
So let's talk about this event coming up on Wednesday, May 8th, 6:30 to 9, Las Vegas Top Golf, and it is the second annual Celebrity Swing event.
Yep. Well, the idea is to raise money for some of the local charities. That, as you know, last year the event was very successful, raised a lot of money for veterans, and this year the goal is really to do something with the kids, with the community organization that goes into the schools, and I think that's what's called Community in Schools, and they have programs there for kids that are, you know, might be challenged with not only school, but also with you know, lifestyle. Their parents could have no money. They might be living in cars. They may have other challenges. There's one or two counselors at these schools that really help the kids. And it's been really, I've been with a woman named Sherry today and learning about the different things that they do. And it'll bring tears to your eyes when you hear some of the stories. But the good news is that they've been able to stay in the schools. You know, the programs have been able to remain in the schools, and from elementary school through really through college, if the kid needs help. So that's pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to working with the Raiders in that program. I have a lot of you know, interest in education and how people learn. And I always say, hey, you know, when you're a kid, you didn't get to choose the family that you were born into.
Right.
And so when people can reach back and help and make a difference in people's lives, and it's a working program, the successful program, I think that's awesome. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And you're probably going to see a lot of former players, Raider players there, but a lot of current players too. Charles Woodson, Cliff Branch, you know, they came last year, and Mark Davis, and I'm sure that, you know, there's a good chance that they'll be there again this year.
Who's the who's your favorite person to catch up with? Maybe you don't see him often, but you get a real kick out of seeing a former Raider at some of these events.
Lester Hayes.
Yeah.
That's my guy.
Yeah.
You know, I actually did a show like your show,
yeah,
with Lester, and they were saying, hey, this is going to be about a 5-minute interview. Man, we were on the show for 45 minutes. We had so much fun reminiscing about our Super Bowl year and some of our teammates. It really was a lot of fun.
I wonder if he ever gets tired of the Stickum jokes. Like, I was a good player too. It wasn't just a freaking Stickum. Come on.
Well, you know what people don't know is that when he played youth football, he was a lineman.
What?
You know, everybody,
wow,
thinks he was a defensive back his whole career. He was an offensive lineman. And then in college, when they discovered how fast he was with his big size, they made him a linebacker. And when he was, you know, in his senior year, thinking about coming to the pros, they timed him. They said, wow, he could be the next Willie Brown. He's big, he's fast, he's strong. Let's make him a corner. And so he really didn't have a career like mine. I was a receiver most of my youth, and I was used to catching the ball. Well, he wasn't, and that's why he needed to stick him. For him, I'm sure his favorite person of all time is Freddie Biletnikoff, who introduced him to the stick'em. Yeah. And that made a huge difference in his career.
Who is the greatest defensive back in Raiders history?
I'd have to say Willie Brown.
Okay.
That's my guy.
Well, he certainly provided one of the best highlights ever with the
close-up
of old man Willie.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked up to him, coming into the league, and you're trying to figure out who do you want to be like, and Willie was one of the guys that I wanted to be like as a young player.
Well, very cool. We appreciate a couple minutes, and we'll see you out there on May 8th, and we'll be popping this all the way up until the date as the celebrity swing goes down with the Raiders Foundation. Thank you so much, Mike Haynes.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, man.
There you go. Mike Haynes. Last year, the Raider Foundation raised money for Veterans Village, and the donation was used to purchase container homes for 6 veterans who were working
impressive.
In career training and life planning, counseling program. So it goes down on May 8th, 6:30, Top Golf right here in Las Vegas. And, Chrissy, if you can, let's send out the address, the website. It's RaidersFoundation.org, but let's send that out on ESPN Las Vegas on Twitter so people know how to get involved and contribute to the effort. But, again, May 8th, it's a Wednesday, 6:30 start until 9 o'clock. Raiders Foundation, Celebrity Swing at Las Vegas Topgolf.
Follow the Cofield and Company crew around Sin City on Instagram at ESPN Las Vegas. It's the Vegas Royalty Hour.
Virginia guy.
We'll never win a championship with this team, though. They can't play offense. You know what it is? Here's the bottom line. There's going to come a game in the tournament where they need to make a shot and get a shot, and they can't get it.
Jerome attacking, goes past Odiase, kicks right corner, open three, DeAndre Hunter got it!
But now it shows in one shining moment, it's all on the
I love this song because it's so versatile. It's the highs and lows of the NCAA tournament, but John Von Tobel's in for the Royalty Hour. He does have a park and a school named after him. And
community center.
And I am the self-anointed king of Las Vegas Sports Talk Radio, Steve Cofield. Adam Hill is here as well. We're going to do that joke every time.
The Joker.
See, it's weird. That's Mike Francesa. We all do what he just did. We all make incorrect predictions, but it's his delivery over the years, and also this claim that he's some sort of gambling expert, big winner, and now with technology, people are rolling out every mistake he makes, every incorrect prediction, and he's just getting killed. And for guys like you, Von Tobel, like I grew up on Francesa, so I know when he was good, but he was always arrogant, and he was always one of those guys you rooted for to be wrong. But now you see him at an advanced age, and he's just stumbling and bumbling over the place, and you're like, I don't get it. How does this guy ever get to this level?
This is who he's always been to me. Like what you heard in that rejoin, this is always what Mike Francesa has been to me. He's falling asleep on the air, spilling his Diet Coke while he's on the air.
No.
Everything that he's
also in your space. So John's doing SiriusXM, the gambling channel for VSiN. So he's in the gambling space. That's our space, too. Screw off.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those guys who everyone, or at least he branded himself as a gambling insider, and he never was. But New York is such a rube market, as most local markets are. Outside of Vegas, so whoever says they're a gambling expert, they're like, yeah, he's a gambling expert. Like, he's never been.
Yeah.
I doubt he's ever won.
He also missed an opportunity to brand himself in that way, where you just make it wrong and then play One Shining Moment, and it's hilarious.
Oh, he'll mock him. He refuses to mock on himself.
Well, here's the thing that kills me with Francesa, because you kind of heard it in that clip, is I don't mind being wrong, right? We're all wrong.
Of course.
The thing is, he comes from a spot where you can clearly tell where he's never done any prep work. Like, he hasn't looked into anything.
Nah.
I heard you guys talk about it yesterday, and like, one of the underrated aspects about Virginia, just like, they're third in offensive efficiency this year.
Yeah.
Like, that was one of the things
they can't make a big bucket. The two previous games, they made
big buckets when it counted. They got a big shot. It's the third time down the stretch they came up with a big shot.
Yeah.
So they've done it, and as Adam mentioned, the offensive efficiency. But you know what? It goes for – this has been a common theme. Adam and I have been doing shows together for 15 years, and we talk about the NCAA tournament every year. It's one of those Johnny-come-lately events, mm-hmm. and now CBS has just gone full bore Johnny-come-lately, and it's at the half last night, and Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley are just fixated on this Kihei Clark not shooting a three-pointer. He sucks! He can't shoot!
He's a 32% shooter.
He's terrible from the field! You know what? They've basically agreed. Tony Bennett has made the sacrifice on offense. We're going to play 4v5. Mm-hmm. If you watch the little guy right now, he's a freshman. Maybe he'll shoot down the road. Him open from three is not a good shot.
He actually knocked one down last night, too.
But it's not. But it's not a shot you
it's
want.
Not, no, but...
But they were on and on and on. They're like, you have to take that shot. No, you don't.
I can't tell you how infuriated I was watching that breakdown at halftime of, here's an open shot, here's an open shot. It's not what they do. Yeah. They get good shots. They get them late in the shot clock for the most part, but then they also use that to get shots later in the game where they're wearing a team down, they're going late in the shot clock all the time, and then all of a sudden teams aren't focused in the first 15 seconds of the shot clock, and then they go and then they score. It's what they do. That's why they're efficient offensively. They know what they're doing.
Yep.
They do. Sorry, you don't.
And like you said, if you've watched Virginia and what Clark has done for that team, they were willing to play 4-on-5 offensively, but he's actually a pretty good defender for a kid who's only 5'9". Right. He's really quick and stay in front of guys, and he's also a brilliant passer. And I think one of the more underrated aspects of this run, we talk a lot about like Diakite and the mid-range shot to force overtime against Purdue. That was an absolute bleeping dime. By him, right? Clark actually, as a freshman, instead of jacking that up at half court, finds Diakite to get that to overtime. Like, the kid, what he does is really underrated, but you actually have to watch throughout the entire year.
They're not watching college basketball.
And that's also an insult to all the guys who covered all year long. They're like, I get out of the studio. Kenny and Kenny Charles are coming in.
Well, Clark Kellogg was there, and Clark let them go on for 2 minutes, and he finally said it. He's like, he can't shoot.
Mm-hmm.
He was nicer about it. He's like, that's not what they want from him. Oh, he's got to shoot. No, he doesn't.
Not his job.
And really, I wish Clark had been prepped with some rosters that, you know, Kenny Smith and Barkley were on, and point out someone who was dreadful. Really, did you want that guy shooting on your team?
No.
If he's wide open? No, there's just certain guys who should not be shooting even at the guard position. So we got an interesting one for John. He's a man. We are males as well.
Man.
Yes. Yes. Mina Kimes does what for ESPN?
A little bit of everything. She's on that
Swiss
the one
Army
show.
Knife. Yeah,
Swiss Army.
She's
knife,
the
yes.
Swiss Army knife of ESPN.
She's on the one show where they like score arguments or whatever.
Oh, come on, Around the Horn. You know the name.
Yes, she's on that show.
She's on Levitard.
She's on Levitard. She does a lot of good stuff.
So Sunday midday, she tweets out, "Don't think this occurs to most guys. So, when you get into a hotel elevator with a strange woman, try to press your button first. And if you get off on the same floor, exit the elevator first." Now, me reading that with a male voice, if you want to call it that, maybe doesn't get across the impact that it had on social media on Sunday.
Oh, boy, did it ever.
It turned into a bunch of dudes getting all pissed off, saying that there are women like Mina who say all guys are rapists, that it's our job to think of these things. It really is a fascinating topic, and I'd never thought of it before because common courtesy would be, hey, ladies first. But, you know, we're finding out more and more that there are a lot of women who are scared of men, that we are dangerous beasts who can break them in half, and they're processing that all the time. We'll get reaction on this. Yeah, it's just her idea of elevator etiquette, but man, it turned into a freaking knockdown, drag-out brawl over the weekend.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers brings you the Vegas Royalty Hour. Have a workman's compensation issue? Call Justin and Matt now at 570-9000.
I told you before, a king is born. I told you before, a king is born.
Back to the Vegas Royalty Hour, presented by Battleborn Injury Lawyers.
We feel like royalty today at brand new Las Vegas ballpark. Chrissy spinning the dials. We have no more dials. Pushing the slides, doing a great job dealing with my annoying nature. It's Adam, it's Steve, it's John Von Tobel. He's part of the Vegas royalty, one of the 100, what do they call it? Like 100 original families?
First 100 families in Las Vegas.
You're so lucky.
Yep.
So lucky. So and so wealthy, too.
Ed Von Tobel was a pioneer.
Once everyone passes away, God,
Ed?
You're rich.
Ed.
Von Tobel Tools.
Yep.
Parks, schools, probably other stuff we don't even know about.
That LVAC on Maryland Parkway near about Sahara, that used to be a Von Tobel tool.
Is that
location.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's a big store.
That makes it even more special.
Yep.
That's a hell of a piece of property.
Yes, it is.
You know, Kobe worked out there one time.
Did he really?
Yeah, adding to the legend of the Von Tobels.
I like it.
And the legend of that plaza.
That's a good point.
Well, I don't think Von Tobel Tools was actually in the commercial center, the plaza right there.
It's right outside of it.
Close enough.
That whole area,
we love that plaza.
Right next to that 7-Eleven.
Love that plaza.
Standalone 7-Eleven.
Good one.
That is a good 7-Eleven, actually. Yeah. I'll hit that 7-Eleven on Sunday mornings before we go over to the Westgate. All right. We were talking about we're in an odd period right now because and rightly so, minorities and women flexing their muscle, right? We're always the second-class citizens in a bad way. So Mina Kimes, female, who works with ESPN, tweeted out something on Sunday, and she said, don't think this occurs to most guys, so when you get into a hotel elevator with a strange woman, try to press your button first, and if you get off on the same floor, exit the elevator first. I've never thought of that before. But I will tell you now, with what's going on with more and more stories about you guys listening, I guess you're the ones, because we're not creeps. Many of you guys who have been horses' asses over the years, putting us in a bad position, now Mina Kimes is basically saying, you know what, we got to think about this all the time. I never thought that I was actually doing the wrong thing by letting a woman get off the elevator first, especially if we're on the same floor. I got to tell you, now people are going to think this is an overreaction because there was a lot of this.
Oh, yeah.
Like I saw one guy was like, this is why no one talks to women anymore.
Especially beautiful
the trouble
ones.
Yep. I am actually starting to think that I will never take an elevator with a woman again.
That's actually a good idea. I think that's a good start.
Because I don't want to scare the hell out of them.
You're woke.
Yeah. Well, and I think actually one of the responses was able-bodied men take the stairs anyway.
Well, that's ridiculous. Now we have to take the stairs?
No.
Because we've already got all these weird unanswered elevator etiquette questions to begin with. Right? Why does everyone go to the corners? I never get that.
Oh, I do.
I'll post up right in the middle.
No, see, that's rude.
What are you doing?
Yeah, you make space for everybody. That's my
tactic.
What
kind of a jerk are you? Go to the corner.
You make space.
This had such an effect on me. Before I got on an elevator yesterday, I got on. I walked to the back, and I didn't actually press my floor because I was like, I don't want to be near anyone, and I don't want to violate anyone's space. So you know what? Wherever it goes, and I'll come back down to my floor. Is that too much?
No, I have some advice for you on that. Yeah. You have to go one step further. Face the wall.
I'll do it.
That's a good idea.
Because if you stay on the elevator and don't pick a floor, it looks like you're casing the joint. Like essentially, you're kind of you know.
I don't know the rules anymore. I'm laughing about this, but I never thought when you're on. God, I'm trying to think. You know what? Where that happened in San Diego, we were on a trip, and that elevator was a weird elevator. What's that old place that you guys have a room at?
The Ramada St. James place, I think.
So they've got like a 1930 elevator.
Like the cage.
The cage. It's just me and this woman, and the whole time I'm on there like, oh my God, I'm so scared. Like I'm the one who's scared. I'm like, I don't know what she thinks. And then that happened. I let her get out first on the same floor.
Now let me.
I should have gone back down.
I will ask you guys. Honestly, on this, because there was so much feedback that came back. Have you ever even thought about it when you're on an elevator? Because, wow, it is constant with me.
Yeah, see, I have thought about this, not from the aspect of, okay, this woman might think I will sexually assault her, she might be afraid. I've just thought about it from the perspective of, does this person think I'm following them? Right?
And that's what I'm saying.
And it's not even just the elevator. I've thought about this in grocery stores where you constantly run into the same person in aisles where there's multiple spots where you're actually in situations where you could potentially follow somebody.
Both pick up the same produce. You're like, oh, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
Such
or like,
lunacy.
They're kind of camping out by like the croutons, and I'm sitting there waiting to get to the croutons, and they're wondering if I'm just watching. And I thought about these kind of things.
Camping out near the croutons?
It happens. But it's not from the prism of, okay, I'm causing fear for this person. It's just, hey, does this person think I'm following?
So And this actually came up, and I was like, wow, I'm glad I'm not the only person, because I do think I'm psychotic in a lot of social settings where I think way more than most people think.
And you're a huge creepy-looking guy.
That is true.
Of all this group, you're the one who could do the most damage.
100% true.
And it doesn't look like you're getting a lot of tukas, so you might be on edge already. Sorry. Did I go too far?
Probably.
He is the biggest, most intimidating person. But I mean, the most creepy-looking is when Big Mac is in.
True.
Right.
Oh, he looks like a total. Yeah.
We've got a weird looking crew. I just look
and
old
yells
and
a
desperate.
Lot.
Yeah. But I will. So, I'm clearly absolutely. I've always thought that it's impolite to go off first. So I absolutely will hold the elevator door for anybody that's on. It's not just women. It's anyone that's on there. I'm always the last person off the elevator. Now, I will also say if it's like the same floor, and I'm at a hotel. And a woman is by herself, and I'm following behind her, like down the same hall to my room. I will 100% stop, check Twitter, see if I do something. Stand there in the hallway. You know what? I'm just going to stand right here and let you go down the hallway. I absolutely have always done that.
There are so many guys listening right now who are like, "You guys are ridiculous."
Banzies.
No, but I've always done that. And somebody pointed that out to her and said, "Hey, I do this," and her response was, "That is unbelievably." Conscientious of you. That's very cool. I'm sure they appreciate it. But try this way in the future. In which, as we said, let them go first, or you know, it is counterintuitive to how you think of what manners would be. But I think you absolutely have to be conscientious.
This comes on the heels of I had already thought about stuff kind of along these lines about 3 weeks ago. There was a story in the Boston Globe. A female columnist wrote about the fact that. There are a lot of women, like the whole joke of like women going to the bathroom in a group, like she's saying there's a reason for it because you're just afraid to leave your group. The old joke that we used to tell, like, hey, there's never a woman left behind, right? Like back in my day when I might be able to hook up, you know, you try to pull a woman out of a group of five, that's not going to happen. They're gonna ruin your game. But I never thought like the whole thing is like protecting each other because they constantly feel like they're in peril, like they're in danger.
Yeah. And I think
I'll take it even further. Why would any woman have a one-night stand? I could annihilate them.
Excuse me.
You know what I mean?
Phrase.
Like you're going.
You mean going at it?
Not that way. No, I'm not. I'm not athletic, and none of that. You know, probably hot dog in a hallway. But I mean, you know, from a might standpoint, you could just break them in half. Most women are
might
most women are smaller than
science.
You. I don't process that.
It's true.
Never thought of that?
I actually went
home after reading the Boston Globe story. I start talking to the SO. I'm like, how many one-night stands have you had?
Okay.
I'm going somewhere with this.
All right.
I was like, it is crazy what's going on right now. And I saw another woman react to this Mina Kimes tweet, you know, etiquette on elevators. You get off on the same floor. You know what? You go first. Let her watch you. Never thought about that before. Another woman said, instead of worrying about perceived predator thoughts, take a second to think about how random women react around you when you walk around at night. Are there women out? Do they seem ready to run? Okay. And this kind of, you know, puts a wrap on it. We're not done talking about it. But also, your cost as a male is bad thoughts. Ours could be death.
Well, the males
too
could
extreme?
Be... males could be killed. I mean, it's not... I get that.
I get the 100%.
Yeah. But I think part of the reaction to this, and as we said, social media reaction was ridiculously strong both ways. And I think it was close to 50-50.
Did Jemele Hill jump in on this tip?
Jemele Hill jumped in. A lot of people did. But what I was getting at is I do believe that a lot... If you're a guy and you hear that and your first thought isn't, wow, I never thought about that. I've never been in that situation. That is... Even if you disagree, that is absolutely the first thought you need to have. If your first thought is, these women, and just getting angry about it, it's probably because you're upset that the power is being taken away from you. And that you're like, I'm not allowed to just walk down the hall wherever I want. No, you're not.
You know, it's weird in 2019, especially for us whites, males. Sucks to be profiled, doesn't it?
It does.
It does.
It does. Yeah. Especially Adam.
It sucks. Sorry, Adam. I was a little harsh on you a little earlier. Was that too much, Sean?
It's probably a step
he's a big guy.
I get that. I'm
barely comfortable around him. I don't know what he's going to do. He's going to snap one of these days.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable.
And I'm going to be the guy who gets it.
Jemele Hill said, if a man is on the same floor as me and I get off first, I either figure out a way to let them pass me by or step to the side and fake call someone. Most men do not understand the temporary panic we feel in those situations.
Yeah.
And
John,
again, if your immediate reaction isn't, wow, you know what? I haven't thought about that. Or yeah, I've thought about that a lot, and it's instead anger and what we're all rapists now, and like the anger that guys have shown these tweets is insane to me. Like, what is wrong with you? You're so caught up in the power that you have to just be a guy and to have that power.
Because we never have to think about it.
That you're mad that it's questioned.
We never have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ever in fear for safety? And you know, unless you're in a situation where, you know, maybe there's multiple people around you. You know, and then because I'll think of that too. I'm like, what am I going to do here if all of a sudden something goes down?
Well, mostly because you're antagonizing all those people.
Well, that's your point. Yeah.
Believe me, I have a whole other story. I got a squatter in the neighborhood, and my head's been on a swivel. I'm thinking about ways to take him out if he comes up to the house.
Like death?
I got weapons all over the garage.
Somebody's camped out in like a camper.
We just have
sleeping
a camper
in the neighborhood,
and the guy's just walking his dog around. I'm like, this is not going to end well.
Does he at least park in like in front of a wall? Like a blank
he,
wall?
He is in front of a wall.
Hole?
Yes.
Okay.
There's a wall area, but he's right next
is
to someone's
courtesy?
House. And he's like three places away from me. So I'll use work loosely. I work in the garage a lot, which means I'm trying to reduce the clutter of the hoard. But as I'm going back and forth, I'm like, this guy's going to be around the corner. I'm going to have to take a rake to his face.
Does he wake up and step out of his RV and go, morning, Steve?
I don't know. It's an old, crappy camper, and I've completely envision driving my car through the camper and watching it crumple. If I have to.
You could do it.
You're insane.
I feel fear like these women do.
But he's doing is living in there.
I don't know if it's like these
he's
women.
He's living there and walking his dog.
Someone posted on that Nextdoor app, which... Damn it!
And then you screenshot it and sent it to me.
I did.
That's got to be your dream, that Nextdoor app.
No, I hate it because people just stir stuff up. Like, yeah. You think the UNLV coaching search was bad with sources? The first person who puts it up is like, guy is squatting in the camper, says he just got out of jail. And you're like, all right, here we go. Where's my rake? Where's the shovel? Do I have a machete?
It's presumptuous. I mean, he could have been in jail for
Where's the weed whacker?
Wait, this is an old movie reference. Are you Kevin from Home Alone? And you think the guy that's squatting
across the street,
the neighborhood is a killer? That's insane.
And all he wants to do is help you out, actually.
It's not insane, though. I told you.
Within
the last 6 months, we had a guy gunned down in front of his house like 12 houses away. I'm on edge. I'm ready.
That's over.
This is what women go through their entire
lives.
That's
the past.
Right. Very similar.
Those are sane women. I'm not sane.
Well, that's definitely factual. You're definitely not sane.
On the way back, we got to get the gambling expert, VSiN expert, JVT, on. There are Chris Davis props, which are freaking tremendous.
Oh,
we've also
awesome.
Got prop bets on AB versus Juju.
The Vegas Royalty Hour is presented by Battle Born Injury Lawyers. Get in a rideshare accident recently? Trust Justin and Matt to handle everything. Call now, 570-9000.
I'm going to kill your bookmaker. I'm going to rip his throat out. I will step on his throat until the man chokes. Let me tell you how. Winners, 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 winners. Free, 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 free.
All right, some hardcore gambling factoids, some plays, some recommendations. JVT is here, John Von Tobel. Here is the Las Vegas ballpark. Beautiful setting. Yeah, the winds died down a little bit, but who the hell knows? This is going to be a really interesting park because it's weird. Around Las Vegas, I'm sure everyone's felt this, there are just windy zones. Like, it's just more windy in certain parts of town. And up here, it's windier. It just is.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I'll give you another one. My front yard not windy, my back windy.
Well, then maybe that's because the house blocks it.
Now, not everyone knows that, but it's weird.
The walls block it. Now, I'll
pull up to the house. I'm like, there's no wind. I go in the backyard. The chimes are blowing off the freaking porch.
Fitting for this portion of the show, yep. I did receive a tweet from someone that after I tweeted a picture of being in here in the ballpark,
mm-hmm.
asking me which direction the wind was blowing and how strong it is because there is now wagering available.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, I mentioned it earlier. It's blown out to right field. So if there's a lefty-laden lineup on either side, the ball gets up, it's going. Now, that said, there's no flags on the left field wall where they've got the big Las Vegas ballpark, so I can't really tell.
I think Sacramento's pitcher is a lefty, so they'll probably be a right-handed heavy lineup.
That's really good inside information, and it sounds like you really know what you're talking about.
Well,
I think
no,
and I'll the lineup you, should.
Oh well, I'll tell you why I assume that, because they were taking batting practice against a lefty, so I assumed lefty.
Okay,
great insight.
Yes, JVT, you ready to lay the money down on that?
Yeah. What's the the price?
Of if it's a lefty starting?
No, like the price on the game. It's money.
No, no.
He'll work on it for you. On your ride home, you can hear that. Chris Davis. Oh, boy. He did it. Which we will have one shining moment for Chris Davis.
Is he better against lefties or righties?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Wait, he did what? There's no shot.
Wow. He broke the record of 46 straight at-bats without a hit. Now you can bet the over-under. When will it end? Over-under is 57.5 at-bats.
Is there a never?
There's got to be an option, right? Or does he do it with a different team? Right, if they buy him out and he somehow.
Well, you can bet the series. A single to break it against the A's is +200. A double is +600. A home run's +400.
God, I want to go double.
And this one's tremendous. Which will be higher, hitless at bats by the time this ends for Chris Davis, or wins this year for the Orioles?
Oh wow, that's great.
And wins for the Orioles is a giant favorite, but I mean, if he gets to 58, 59, 60, 64, this goes a little while longer. I don't know that the Orioles can win more than 65 games.
I was gonna say, if it hits 64, then all of a sudden I think that price flips. I think you get to flip a favorite at that point. It's tough to win 65 games for this team.
It's so insane.
I do on some level feel bad.
No,
but I really, really enjoy this.
It's such a weird story because he's owed so much money. Yeah. And at what point do you just say, hey, I'm not going to collect the money? And I know you wanted to ask the question, but it's 100% to zero. Like, who would pass up on the money? And plus, you're an athlete with pride. You're like, of course I'm going to hit at some point. It's just a bad run.
Right, but my question is more, how much would you have to get paid to just be despised and hated at your job to where every time you show up, you're booed and jeered and screamed at? Like, obviously he's getting enough money for that, there's no question, but what is enough? Like, is $100,000 a year for you?
What's the math on this? Is it, it's 81 home games, he's making about $23 million, so is it $30,000 a game? Am I right on that, or is it $300,000 a game?
Probably 30 is probably
we're good,
right.
Math. 30
we're
good, right. Math. Good
lefty math, righty, who's starting? I don't know.
I will say from the mentality standpoint for him, because this stretches back to last year, that's got to be somewhat of a positive, right? I mean, like, for him, he just looks at it as, what is he this year, over 28, over 29, something in that range. For him, it's not – he could think about it as the 0 for 47 stretch. But at this point for him, I think you're thinking of it as, I'm 0 for, 28 or 29. I can get back into this.
No, he's 0 for 0. Every at-bat is new, John.
And by the way, that's a good point. It's $283,000 a game.
Oof, that's awesome.
To just get
that's plenty for me.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not.
No,
feeling,
me too.
I'm not feeling.
No,
that.
Me
you're,
too.
You're loathed all over this town.
Yeah.
Oh, there's no question about that.
People don't like you
for sure. Yeah, absolutely. But I don't. I mean, I don't know. I just don't know what the number is. I mean, I'm not. It's not to where every day I show up and people are just standing here screaming at me. I mean, yes, when I'm out in public and people recognize me, they're like, "I hate you," but. Yeah, I just think for every time you walk up to the plate, the whole crowd, boo, you suck.
If you were told every day you suck 50 times.
I am.
Well, not even that, but if it would be the equivalent of somebody like going, stumbled on your words again today, Adam. Way to go, Hill. Right? Like every time he's walking away from the plate, it's you're 0 for 48.
I feel like that does happen. That's what Twitter is.
Faraway plays props on Antonio Brown and Juju. I got Juju on all these. Most receiving yards, Antonio Brown -200.
Juju.
+150.
Yeah.
All on Juju?
Juju.
Yeah. Most receptions, Antonio Brown, the favorite, -180.
Antonio Brown.
Really?
I think he's going to catch a lot of passes.
Carr is 75%, but it's all 2 yards, and he's just going to throw it to him every single time.
Most touchdowns, Antonio Brown, -150.
Ooh, I think she was there.
Yeah, Juju.
What are you doing for Game of Thrones on Sunday?
Nothing yet. I don't have any plans.
We're having a party, but I did invite you because you have a kid, and the SO banned all kids. All
right.
But you can come along if you want. You gotta find a sitter.
He's a three-eyed raven. I can bring him over.
Okay.
Half the audience is like, what? Adam's like, what?
No, did you guys watch Saturday Night Live last week?
No. No.
It was Game of Thrones was hosting. Kit something?
Oh, yeah, Kit Harington.
Jon Snow.
And
sort of possibly famous. The prince who was well,
brought Kit. The monologue was a bunch of people, I guess, from the show.
Right.
Asking questions about how it ends.
Mm-hmm.
And I was genuinely interested in finding out from people who watched the show if it was funny or not.
Oh. Well,
like, obviously,
it.
I didn't get any reference at all that was done.
We'll check it out.
I'll have to watch it.
You can bet back. Who's going to sit on the throne at the end of the season. Who's going to be the big boss?
Wait, people, it changes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they're warring. It's the Game of Thrones. There's all these folks and beasts and...
I just thought there was a king.
Icy kings competing for who's going to sit on the throne at the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah. You sit on the throne.
They're all going to meet at some point.
Why don't they just vote?
Westeros.
There's no voting.
Why don't they have democracy?
It's medieval times.
It's the best way to do things.
No.
The King of the North wants it.
Who's that monster thing?
You mean the white one? The white?
No,
the Ice King?
Yes, that thing.
Yeah.
The Night King.
The Night King?
Odds to sit on the throne. Bran is the favorite, +220. Jon Snow's +350. Sansa, come on. 5-1. Daenerys, 7-1. Gendry, very underrated sleeper. He is a Baratheon. 7-1. Littlefinger, 10-1. Night King, 10-1. Tyrion, 10-1. This crossbreed, weird incest baby of Jon and Daenerys, 14-1. Arya, 16-1. Fat Samwell, who sort of like Adam, but Adam's thinner, 20-1. Cersei, 25. Jaime, 40. Varys, get out of here, 70.
Varys, yeah, that's got to be
that would be a shocker.
Jaime, 40-1.
Where are you getting this?
It was 30-1 a couple weeks ago, so this has dropped. I got it from Reddit. It's a great Reddit stuff there. Oh yeah.
By the way, are you doing? You have to close the week on VSiN doing a lot of this. And you have to do it with Matt Humans.
Oh, Humans hates it. I tried to bring it up. I think he's going to fight me. It's ridiculous. But it's a lengthy theory. But essentially, because the thought is that Jon Snow is the prince who was promised, or maybe their weird son is. But the thought is that Jaime is actually the prince who was promised. And there's a couple of poems and prophecies in the books that reference the prince who was promised and his hand that was removed and all of this and. There's three key moments. There's three key
the
moments.
Look on Adam's face right now.
Oh, there's three key moments in the because the prince who was promised changes himself, strips himself of his former persona three different times, and there's three key moments in Jaime's story in which he tries to change who he is, and of course, really the final moment came, near the end of season 7. I don't know if I spoil it or not because people are still catching up, but
what happened?
Wasn't it 2 years ago?
Yeah. Season 7? Well, still. I just caught up 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I just started.
And this season's going to be.
There's definitely a 1 year bit limit on spoilers.
No. Because they basically, what they're doing is is it 5 or 6 episodes?
Six.
Six.
Seven?
So it's 6. Oh, this new season. They're like 90 minutes. They're like movies.
Yeah.
They're like 90 minutes.
Actually, the first one's only 45 minutes.
Is this going to cut?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what? Don't sell us a bill of goods here. I want my 90 minutes.
I know.
Is this going to cut into last week tonight? That's all I care about.
No, because everything's scheduled, so I feel like
you'll be okay.
But if it's 90 minutes, they might not show it for a couple weeks.
Will.
Oh, God.
Real quick theory. This is the SO pitching this one. She thinks that, and who gets the payment then? She thinks that Bran might be the Night King.
Okay.
So then who would get paid?
It.
Like, we don't really know where he is in time.
Because the Night King touched him. Yeah, it's big. I like that.
She's a wacko, so she's.
Well, I mean,
we got to find out from Seidel's. Seidel's a GOT devotee as well.
But then you pay out the Night King because I'm sure they would.
I like Arya.
Why is somebody paying someone?
Well, we're talking about the paying out of the prop.
Oh.
Right. Okay. Like who would get the who wins if he's actually if Bran is actually the Night King, just all frozen and evil.
By the way, why is Littlefinger still on that odds list?
Who knows? Because they can do anything they want when they write these scripts.
Yeah. So I'm just saying.
Is that a snitch?
Yeah,
bring somebody back.
Throwing it out there,
You never know. These guys are wacky. They basically told George R.R. Martin, just like me, they heard that he was both a Jets and a Giants fan. They're like, you can't write anymore. You've lost your mind. You're senile. Get out of here.
Smart.
So now it's just gone off the beaten path.
So no more dragons?
Jets and Giants fan?
Yep.
That's the worst.
Yeah, he was upset, whatever it was, 8 years ago, livid that the Jets moved on Revis Island. And then 2 weeks ago, he's like, oh, no, Beckham got traded. I'm pissed. You can't be a fan of both. It's not the way it works, George. You've lost your mind.
It's like wearing a hat with UNLV and UNR on it.
Ugh. No one would ever do that. except it happened.
What an idiot.
All right, John. We appreciate it. We'll come back here. 5 o'clock hour on the way. We're a little
under, well, a little over, 2 hours away from first pitch at the brand new Las Vegas ballpark. The opener is tonight.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas.